All right, you're listening to KKUP Cupertino, and during that last song, I'm happy to say Mark Yeagers came into the studio, and he's got some very interesting instruments here that he's going to tell us about today and play. So you're listening to KKUP Cupertino. It's just a couple minutes before the hour of 4 p.m., and I think we're going to spend some time here talking to Mr. Yeagers. Mark, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah. Any problem coming in this time?
No. This time was much better than the last time we tried to do this.
Yeah, so. Man. You had a pretty rough patch. I was going to have you on about a year ago, and I guess you got in a little accident and hurt your hand, but God is good, and you can play again.
I am, yeah.
What a miracle.
Right. So the day before, driving back from out of town, and had a very serious crash, totaled our vehicle, and we had various injuries, and my wrist was broken, and a couple of months later I was finally able to play guitar again, long story short.
Wow. Yeah, well, that's a real blessing, because you have a gift, and I think you're going to tell us a little bit. Tell us what's your latest project you're working on.
So my latest project, I've been a blues junkie for over a decade now, since I discovered that. It finally gave me the musical focus that I needed. I was originally with a different local blues band for a while, and then spun off, and with some church friends of mine, we got a gospel blues band going called Crimson Blues.
Nice.
And it's basically what we call high-octane Christian blues. It's basically kind of punchy, edgy blues rock with a gospel message. A little bit of Chicago blues, but actually quite a bit of Delta blues influence. But, you know, because that's kind of underdone, and I really love that stuff. So we do that a lot, and we're working on a studio album right now. But you already knew that.
Yeah, but our listeners don't know, and I think you have none other than Johnny Cosmic helping produce your album.
Yes, that's right. Johnny Cosmic is the producer, which makes us very happy.
And you're over at our Tiki Records. It's been around for a minute.
That is correct.
One of the oldest, is it maybe the oldest recording studio in San Jose, I believe.
I don't know, but a very, very long time. Yeah. And, you know, we're loving it.
And good people running that over there, too.
Right.
So, I've been out a few times and watched you while you're laying down some tracks on your album, and I got to agree with that high octane.
Yeah.
You got a real powerful voice and sound and message, and the reason I invited you onto the show, though, was maybe a year or so ago, or maybe a little more, we were over in Foster Cities, and you were doing some outreach blues for an event,
right.
and you brought up these instruments. You brought one of them up, and you told a story. So why don't you tell our audience the instruments you have and a little bit about what they are and how you came to learn about them.
Right. So probably that would have been at the Higher Power Recovery Program in Foster City, which is one of our favorite places to play. And that was probably the cigar box guitar, correct?
Yeah, I believe it was.
Okay, yeah. So I kind of just accidentally discovered about cigar box guitars because I'd seen other people use them, both the North Mississippi All-Stars. And also, there's a fellow named Glenn Kaiser. He was one of the early pioneers of Christian rock back in the 70s, and he went off solo and went back to his roots, which is blues. So he's actually an unbelievable over-the-top blues guitarist, and he does a lot with cigar box guitars. In fact, he lives in Chicago, and he helps run and operate a homeless shelter in the bad part of downtown Chicago, and he builds cigar box guitars in order as one of the ways to fund the shelter, you know.
So, wow. And he's in the right place for the blues if he's in Chicago.
Well, that's right, you know. So anyway, I thought, well, it's cool and it sounds neat and I'd like to get one. But then in addition to that, I discovered it's a fascinating part of blues history, as is these other instruments that I have here.
All right. Well, I think you brought in a CD. What's on the CD? I'm going to play the second track for a minute.
Okay. Well,
tell us about that.
So the second track, that's actually a tune from my solo album called Slide Ahead,
All right.
which I finally finished and released a little over a year ago. And this is a song called Don't You Listen to the Devil. And it's basically using the soup can guitar.
The soup can. Well, okay, you better tell us a minute about the soup can.
So in addition to cigar box guitars, and another thing people would do is back in the day is make guitars out of just about anything. And we can touch on that later.
But, yeah, we will.
But the soup can guitar, it's basically an instrument where the body of the guitar is a soup can. And I decided to, I wanted a little more than just the old retro thing where you just hear the tinny sound of the soup can. So I put actually a very nice little pickup on it, which was handmade by a really cool guy who's part of the cigar box guitar community. And so it's become a favorite. And about every couple of times the Crimson Blues plays, we will pull this thing out. And we do this one particular song, which is kind of a high-energy blues rock thing that's got a kind of a heavy Delta blues drive to it. So.
Nice. Well, with that intro, let's take a listen. Wow. I guess that is high octane, eh?
There you go.
Yep. That's fabulous. Why don't you were while your song was playing, we were talking a little bit about the components of that song. Why don't you tell me how you got that part where it sounds a little different at the end.
Well, yeah. So towards the end of the song, kind of in between the little instrumental snippets, I sing one more bit of the verse phrase. And if you listen closely, it sounds like the voice is sort of distorted coming through in a radio or something. And what that was is that on this guitar, in addition to the regular custom-made guitar pickup on the surface, there's also a piezoelectric pickup inside, which has a real dirty, edgy, raspy sound.
Getting all technical on me now.
Well, basically, there's another little pickup inside that will hear sound,
actually,
the words you say. So I turn a knob to activate that inside little pickup, and I hold the bottom of the can up to my mouth, and I just shout down into the can.
Oh, that's cool.
And you know, it's also a favorite thing to do when we're playing live, you know, because it's just kind of a novelty, and it's kind of crazy looking, and you know, people say, "Oh wow, look at that!" You know, and
well, so now you told me, how did you learn how to make these unusual instruments?
Well, you learn just by not knowing what you're doing, actually. So the first cigar box guitar that I ever got, and the one that I actually use performing most of the time. It wasn't one that I made, it's one that I bought, because at the time I had no clue about cigar box making. I just knew I wanted to have one. I wanted to get one that's good, you know, professional grade, and it was made by a very good vendor, you know.
Was it Cubano or?
Actually, it was some guys, the company's called Daddy Mojo, and they're in Montreal, Canada.
About the cigars. Did you have to smoke the cigars?
No. They just start with an empty box.
All right. And Johnny's got a big pile of them. We'll have to make a guitar.
Well, totally. Totally. I mean, you can do
so
it.
So you bought one. How it was made.
Well, I bought one just to have it and use it. And I began to realize after that, you know, people do just make these from scratch. And, you know, why can't I do that too? There's a whole community all across the country who collaborate and share ideas online. And one of the first things they tell you is there's no exact right or wrong way to do this. You just experiment. If it doesn't work, you scrap it and do it again. So
and probably some of the best things are you weren't supposed to do it that way, but you got a sound you never expected, maybe.
Well, that can happen.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing that happens, though, is every time you build one of these, I make some other totally different stupid blunder mistake and have to figure out how to work around and solve the problem. So it becomes another learning experience. So they're most entirely built from scratch at this time, except for the necks. These little guitar necks that'll hold like three or four strings.
So why don't you hold it up and I'll see if I can describe it.
Yeah.
So the soup can guitar, it looks like a quart size. Here's how old I am. The kind of cans when I was a kid, juice came in. They're about,
the big one.
8-10 inches tall and 4 or 5 across. And we used to strap them to our feet and pretend they were stilts.
Yeah, this is beefaroni, by the way.
Wow, the good stuff. So he's got the can, and then there's a narrow little neck. It's all fretted. It looks almost, you didn't make that?
No, these fretted necks here, these are pre-made by vendors who provide supplies and parts for cigar box builders. My aspiration is at some point to try building my own, which I'll try to do pretty soon. I've got a starter kit, you know, with all the materials and tools that you need to do your own neck building.
That's really cool.
To get started, like, this is like the most challenging, difficult part. If you get the neck wrong, you're going to have an unplayable instrument.
Sure.
So, like, to get off the ground and get bootstrapped, you know, you get that part ready-made, and you build all the rest.
Now, you said there's some history to these instruments, and I guess, was a banjo originally would have come from Africa, and was it made with a gourd? I don't know.
Well,
what's the history of these instruments?
Well, the history of these, some of the roots of some of these does actually trace back to Africa, including this one string, you know, that we'll mention later.
Okay.
But the history that I was alluding to is just where these kind of instruments came to be here in the U.S. And they're part of the early history of the development of blues music in the Deep South. And basically what happened is all the people who were involved in blues music were very dirt poor, living in abject poverty. And frankly, nobody had the money to go to the store and buy a guitar.
Sure.
And so they simply had to make do and innovate and think out of the box. And they would take any kind of scraps of anything imaginable. You know, junk things to be thrown away, baling hay wire, all this kind of stuff. And they would have to fabricate their own instruments out of anything that they could. And there's all kinds of interesting stories about that. John Lee Hooker started musically as a very young child by taking rubber straps and nailing them to the side of a barn and making the equivalent of a one-string instrument.
Did he really?
One I got here, yeah. But he did it with rubber straps, you know, and you stick a can underneath to prop it out, and then you tighten it, doing, and you twang, twang, twang. And
oh, that's really cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and so it became a big part of blues history that a lot of the instruments were just handmade because no one could afford otherwise. And since then, people came to realize, well, this has kind of an interesting, distinct, haunting sound of its own. And so it's become a virtue in and of itself just to have something like this that calls back to that retro era of blues, some of the old sounds. The other motivation that some people have today is that there's sort of two trains of thought in the world of building things like cigar box guitars. There's the one school of thought where you make something really good quality because you want to use it. You want it to be professional grade. That's what I bought first. And some of these, I try to get as close to that high standard as I can with the ones that I build, but I'm still a student, but they're pretty good. Mm-hmm. But then there's another school of thought where you try to make an instrument out of the very cheapest, inexpensive, junky parts that you can just to prove that it can be done and just to prove that it can make music and be played.
Yeah, music and everything if you know how to bring it out.
Well, yeah. And then, you know, the other thing, too, is there's kind of metaphorical pictures, you know, and this kind of gets into the gospel part. This was a kind of a talking point that Glenn Kaiser made. He's the fellow in Chicago I mentioned.
Yes.
One of the reasons he loves guitar made from old junky cigar box parts is that he said that it's a symbolic metaphor for how God loves and cares about us, because we're symbolic of these instruments because there were pieces that were beaten up and headed for the scrap bin. They were going to be junk. They were going to be thrown away into the incinerator, but the touch of the master's hand snatch this stuff away from being destroyed and incinerated and transform them into something beautiful. So that's his metaphor for the gospel message.
Well, that's a beautiful metaphor.
Yeah, I thought so. So I love to borrow it from him. So.
Yeah, well, so you mentioned the one-string instrument you have sitting there in front of you.
Right.
And that consists of, I don't know, what is that, a root beer bottle?
Yes, there's a root beer bottle.
Go ahead and explain what it is.
So what
and then
this
we're gonna
is,
he's going to play it for us.
Yeah, so this is a one-string instrument known as a diddly bow. The original rocker Bo Diddley, he actually derived his stage name from this instrument. Just reverse the two words. And basically what it is in its simplest form is that you have a plank of wood, and then you set a you have a bottle laying on the top, and you stretch a guitar string over the bottle and down to some kind of tuning knob or something. It can even just be low-tech like a screw eye. But you just have a single guitar string that's stretched over the top of a bottle over this wooden plank, and that's it.
Yeah, so it's literally a horizontal board with a board bottle laying flat on it.
Yeah.
And there's a pickup under that string.
Yeah, so I've added a pickup, of course, to make it electrified. And you can see, interesting, if you've ever seen the Guitar Lovers documentary film, It Might Get Loud.
I haven't. Well, I guess I better go see it.
It's very cool because Jack White and Jimmy Page and Edge, the U2 guitarist, it's basically a documentary where the three of them just talk about music. And the very opening scene is Jack White building one of these instruments from scratch out in the farmyard with these like cows and stuff watching him. And then he plugs it into a Marshall amplifier and starts wailing away.
Wow. So. All right. I'm gonna see if we can get the mic. You brought a little amp into. Mm-hmm. So folks might take a little tweaking, but we're going to go ahead and listen to you play your
the diddly bow. Oh, yep.
All right. Learn something new every day.
Here we go. Thank you.
Wow, that's something. That's really cool. Yep. You could get some good scary music out of that too.
You could.
Scary sound effects.
A little reminiscent of a theremin, I guess, right?
Oh yeah. But much wow. So, you know, I homeschooled my kids for many years. Mm-hmm. And we would love to be out in the community and meet somebody who might be making something like this, and the kids, I can't tell you, any kid, school kid or not, and adults, as you know, there's something really exciting about making something with your own hands.
Right.
Plenty of people have money to go down and buy an instrument for their kid, but I really think that these, especially this one you just have right here that could be made for nothing.
Yes.
It would be an amazing thing to introduce children to music. And I don't know, you know, if there's anybody in the Bay Area doing that, give me a call, because I'm going to be doing some home, away from home kind of educational topics at some point. And
right.
I'm always excited to hear something that kids could do, doesn't cost any money, and introduces them to the art of music and making.
Yep. So along those lines, I do know that around the country, there are various individuals. They go around and they do cigar box guitar building workshops as an educational things for kids. And they will get a great big pile of cigar boxes for cheap. And they'll be very low tech. I mean, they won't have the fretted necks like this or anything. They'll be very low tech, crude materials. But there's stuff where you can totally put this thing together, you know, probably in 45 minutes or so, and a kid has a working instrument when they're done. So.
Yeah, and I expect some of the adults listening to this show might be excited about that too. And if I had a musical bone in terms of playing in my body, I know that's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
And so you were playing, did you have a socket that you were using as your slide, or was that an actual slide?
This is
it looks like a socket.
It's a regular bottleneck
oh,
slide.
Oh, it is a bottleneck.
But as slide guitarists will tell you, I mean, you can totally use a big old socket.
You can go out to your dad or mom's toolbox
and
get a socket.
Or right here, I've got like a shot glass that I picked up from a pawn shop.
Gibson one, I think.
Or when I'm at a pawn shop and I'm looking at old guitars and I want to try one out, I'll go over to their tool section and I'll grab a great big chrome socket and I'll use that for a slide.
That's cool.
They work great.
That's cool. Okay. Would you like to hear a little more? You said the other song on the CD you brought in, I think you said, was your cigar box guitar?
Yes.
We'll listen to just a bit of that, because that's a long song.
Yes, and it's a very long jam, so you probably just want part. Yeah,
that's all right. We're gonna get that on right now.
Okay.
That's the perfect song for the next show, because that's the blues train.
There you go. Yeah.
All right. So now, we were talking, and I heard a regular modern electric guitar in there.
Right.
And so, the cigar box was the more twangy sounding one.
Yeah, that twangy one that slid up and down. Yeah, that was the cigar box guitar.
Super cool. And you mentioned that the you have a little tiny amp in here that you played your diddly bow on. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned, I think, that you had it. What did you say?
Well, I was mentioning that the small instruments like this in and of themselves will typically have kind of a light sound, a little bit tinny. It's sort of a delicate sound, and it's
sure.
it's very pretty sound in and of itself. As it turns out, for the kind of more edgy blues rock style that I'm going after, I like to punch it up a little bit. So I will use what guitarists will know about this. It's basically overdriving, where you have the effect that distorts it and makes it thicker and punchier.
A nice crunchy sound.
Yeah.
All right, so what you going to play a little bit, your other instruments? I want to hear a little bit more about your background.
Well, let me grab the four string here. This is okay. I just kind of wrapped up the construction last night because I really wanted to bring it today.
Oh, cool. That one's really pretty.
There's one little cosmetic thing to finish. I want to put a little more of a nice frame around that.
Instrument is really beautiful. It's a beautiful... ornately painted, I guess, cigar box. You got a couple of holes with brass trim.
Right.
And beautiful neck, and you've got copper. Is that a copper pickup?
Well, this is the handmade pickup I was talking about. It's custom made
beautiful.
By an individual who makes it super thin so that it will fit in the construction of a cigar box guitar. Because normal guitar pickups are so very
tall and thick,
you'd have to chop deeply into the wood of your neck to just to fit it in, and then you lose a strength. There's all kinds of problems.
It's a really pretty instrument. I'm going to try to get some pictures, and I don't know how we could post them, but they're really beautiful. Let me put your little amp mic on.
Okay.
Here we go. Bravo, that's great.
So you can hear that, you know, with a... I like to sort of punch up the tone and make it a little more edgy. If you hear right against the microphone,
Sweet sounding.
It's sweet sounding, but it's also, you know, sort of thin and bright. You know, for blues rock, you want a little more punch.
But it's got a sweet, pretty voice.
Yeah, no, there's times I'll use, you know, just this natural, clean voice, too, and it is very pretty, as you say.
Yeah.
But these kind of guitars, because the cigar boxes are smaller, these little tiny sound holes, they don't project as much deep sound.
Yeah, and those holes are maybe the size of a 50-cent piece.
Yeah.
Because it's got to all fit on a cigar box.
Yeah, so you got limited size,
right. It sure is pretty, and you made that yourself.
All except, you know, like I said, the pre-made neck, yes.
And the pickup, but what a beautiful instrument.
Right.
Y'all listen to KKUP Cupertino. It's about 4:27 p.m., and I'm in the studio with Mark Yeagers of Crimson Blues Band. That's Honeybee. You listen to T-Bone Taxi Show. And Mark was nice enough to drive in today and bring some of his really remarkable homemade and some instruments and tell us a little bit of the history of homemade instruments, blues instruments in particular, from that developed in the South. And I guess it's really exciting that folks have either rediscovered or are here. You are in California, and you're a techie by trade.
Yeah.
For your day job, right?
Yeah. I mean, I just came over from a software job downtown. You know, where I'm doing user interfaces. But
look at that. You know, music feeds everybody's soul.
Well, that's right. And even though I'm in the middle of all the very advanced cutting-edge tech stuff. And
look at you. You got a root beer bottle and a guitar string on a board.
Yeah. And like you're saying, the thing that's feeding my soul in this case is going back to really retro stuff. And the kind of blues that I love has those retro influences.
Yeah, like you love those Delta blues.
Yeah, in the Mississippi Hill Country. Like the songs that you were just playing, I mean, they're influenced by guys like R.L. Burnside and Junior Kimbrough is another influence that we bring into the band.
So now you said you fell in love with the blues about 10 years ago, but what's your musical? Did you start out as a rock guy, I'm guessing, because you like to play that rock and blues?
Well, I grew up, of course, listening to rock and
like
roll.
Like all of us.
And I took up the guitar as a teenager, but didn't have much chance to, I wasn't in the right setting to really get good at it, and didn't have opportunities to do much, wasn't well connected and getting into a band. But, and the funny thing is, my favorite kind of music growing up was progressive rock, you know, like ELP and and Rush. And,
oh, yeah.
But, and I think that stuff's awesome, and I still love it today, this last year.
As we used to call that air pudding.
Yeah.
I love that stuff, too, I got to admit.
Yeah, I loved it.
Once upon a time.
It broke my heart this last year when both Emerson and Lake died.
Oh,
and,
yeah. They were great.
But here's the thing. As awesome as that music was, the skill level required to play it is just over the moon. You have to be the best of the best virtuoso to even think about playing that. And then you're not going to get any audience to listen to you. Because
yeah.
I'm one of the, you know, we're one of the few people who like that. So
saying I'm old, Mark.
No, I'm saying
child
that,
of the 70s.
No, I'm saying that we have refined tastes.
Oh, that must be
yes,
it.
Yes. So many years later, after sort of being musically frustrated for a long time and, you know, just doing other stuff in life, I'd always had sort of this passing interest, like, that blues stuff is kind of fascinating, but I don't know how to learn more about it. And back around, it was a little more than a decade back, I think around 2003 or 2004, this bookstore company, they did one of these remote mobile things where they come into your workplace and they take over a conference room and they put out a bunch of stuff and they have a sale.
Sure.
And you can come downstairs and see stuff and buy stuff. And I'm just
when people still had books.
Yes. And I was mulling around looking at stuff, not expecting to find anything interesting. But then I saw this 4-CD package for $20, and it was called 100 Blues Masters.
Oh.
It was 25 songs per CD.
Nice.
Thought to myself, okay, this is a way to finally figure out what this blues stuff is about.
That lady who did the Julia Child cookbook. He just went through all 100?
Well, something like that. And you know, I did the math in my head. I said, okay, $20, 100 songs, it's 20 cents per song. If 80% of them suck, I'm still doing okay, you know, in terms of how much money I'm going to spend for some good songs.
Sounds like it might have changed your life.
I went back upstairs and I plugged it into the CD player on my computer at work and I put the headphones on and everything changed.
Wow.
After that, I was a blues junkie. My family is driven crazy by hearing nothing but blues all the time. Got into a secular blues band for a couple of years. Wanted to do Christian blues, but didn't know where to begin. And by luck, by divine providence, came in contact with some other folks who had a passion for the same thing. And the rest was history.
Well, I think that's fabulous.
Yep.
Yeah. Did you grow up around here?
I grew up over in Tracy and Stockton.
Oh, when it was all farm country then.
Yeah. Spent, you know, the early years of my adult life over there. And then, you know, being in the software business, I really needed to come here.
Sure. Wow. Well, I got to say, it's been such a pleasure to mm-hmm. have you on. And I'm just blown away by your instruments and your talent and your gifts. And thank you so much. Is there anything you'd like to, do you have a website or somewhere folks could go hear more about your music or when you're playing out?
We do. If you just, like I said, the name of the band is Crimson Blues. So if you go online at crimsonbluesband.com, we're right there. You can also go to Facebook and do a search on Crimson Blues Band. You can also go to YouTube and do a search on Crimson Blues Band. And along the way, if you find any of those resources or just connect with me directly on Facebook through that, you can then find resources about my solo recording, which I did over the years too.
Do you have anything about your special instruments on your website? Mark.
Yeah, I know.
I'm going to take some pictures and you post them up there.
Yeah. I need to dedicate a couple of pages specifically to it, but you can find various songs and videos along the way. So if you look on YouTube and you look at a tune called Rollin' and Tumblin', you'll see the Diddley Bow. If you look for the tune That Train Is Gone, you'll see the Cigar Box.
Excellent.
And if you hunt around and find my promo video on YouTube for my solo album. It features the soup can there.
So. All right, folks. So there, you definitely go take a look. You won't believe what he's playing and getting those sounds out of him. And, well, thanks again, Mark.
Thank you.
Wow, I could sit here all day, but I guess I better spin a CD and we could talk a little more.
Totally.
And thanks to you folks for listening in. I got about a little less than a half an hour to go here. This is the Honeybee.
Yep. Play some blues.
Yeah, we're gonna. Well, hey, this is the Honeybee. I'm back with you. Mark has packed up all his instruments, and we were enjoying listening to that Coco Taylor there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what was you told me you saw her?
A couple of years ago at the festival that the college does out here on Mother's Day weekend. And I forget, I'm drawing a blank, the name of the fella who headlined right after her, but she stole the show.
I bet
next
she's
guy
great.
Came on, and we all went home.
Poor guy. Yeah, but I'm sure she was fabulous. And I guess I'll sign out with just a little bit more Coco Taylor until the conductor's ready to ride that blues train.